morning. That was the worst Uber in my life.
Yeah, that.
That's how we started. That's just the worst Uber in my life. That's the worst way to ever start a day. Good morning. This is The Blitz. Charlie Collier, Sam Beard here with you for the next couple of hours. Getting into your lunch break on this Friday. It's not a good one.
It's not.
It's not a good one, but hey, we're here together. We're going to try to make it the best one possible. I guess. You know, that's all you can do. Life goes on. You know, the sun still came up today, and we just all have to carry on with our lives, and, you know, it is what it is. So we're going to make the best of it here, but that was the worst Uber ever. So I was like, you can turn right on the Gay Street Bridge and get right on the interstate, and if she would have done that, I think I would have been here on time. But the app said...
Oh, don't tell me you hit the Bassmaster Classic traffic.
The app said to go on Henley instead.
Mm.
And I was just like, hey, that's not a good idea. And she was like, I don't deviate from the map. So, I mean, it took like 15 minutes to get from like the Henley Street Bridge to the interstate there.
Yeah.
But outside of that, also just whipping the car. Like, I'm talking instant acceleration, like slamming brakes, like... driving around people in traffic. Not a good driver. A pretty scary driver. While eating fried food. While playing loud. Like, not just regular, but like loud heavy metal.
10 a.m. What kind of fried food exactly?
Like just hash rounds.
Okay. That's not as bad.
I mean, it's I just thought it was like a... too. Like if you've been, you know, if you're...
Yeah, maybe, that's not...
Maybe if you were drinking a little bit last night. You know, that's not what you want in the morning, especially if you... I also had to sit in the back seat, and I also get, like, a little car sick. So all of that combined was just terrible. Just a terrible, terrible experience.
Yeah, that's actually probably one of the worst. A little...
I mean, it was loud,
a little
dude.
Death metal, there was fried food-scented Uber as you're a little hungover. That's a good way to start your morning.
I don't know exactly what the song was, but for about like a minute and a half, just like it was just 90 seconds of like a guitar going wah, 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 wah. I want to bleed out, and it was just loud. It was so loud. It was just right in my ear. It was terrible.
I would have I think that could have gotten bad enough to where I'm just like, can you just turn music off? Like,
for the
I'd
first
rather
time
sit
of
in
my
silence
life,
than,
I'm not giving
than
an Uber
you.
5 stars. I'm giving her 4.
That's a generous rating. I would go 3 or 2.
And I'm yeah. I mean,
I would tank that rating personally. Heavy metal is just having heavy metal getting played at the when I walk into an Uber. That's automatically down to like 3.5 stars for me. And then you're eating fried food. That's probably taking out that half star. So you're down to 3. And then you're driving like a maniac. I'd give it like a 2.5. I think 4 is a little too generous there, Charlie.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like 3 is just mean. Those guys really need their stars.
Yeah, well, maybe don't play heavy metal and eat fried food at 10 in the morning.
I guess that's fair.
You know? I don't think anyone deserves to involuntarily listen to heavy metal in the mornings.
Loud, dude.
Like really loud.
Loud.
That's one of the few genres of music that I just like will I don't care
that's
how
like, that's the I mean the closest I can get to it is like I can listen to like one Korn song.
Nah, I don't even know who Korn is. Like I don't touch heavy metal. That just makes my brain hurt. That's the type of music that makes my brain hurt.
For the most part, yeah. I mean, I've tried. Like, I try to be open-minded about all types of music. But, not. Nah, yeah, I mean, that was just brutal. But how are you today? I mean, that's a dumb question to ask this morning. But
Yeah, I'm not.
I always ask it.
I've seen better days. I'll say it like that. I've seen better days. Yesterday was a tough one, but sports aren't real. We'll live and learn.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Hey, we got our women's team tomorrow.
Yeah, we do. And we got baseball.
We got baseball, A&M coming to town.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to take your wins wherever you can, but there's not a whole lot right now.
Swimming and diving championships are, like, going on, or, like, maybe they were, like, last week or something. We might have done well.
Yeah, they were last week, actually. I heard that in one of my classes.
That makes sense. I was on Tinder, and there were swimmers from, like, 20 different schools, and I just couldn't believe that there were that many in Knoxville.
You were a little confused why the Idaho swim team is on Tinder?
Yeah, dude, I mean, I was just blown away. So many swimmers.
That's actually hilarious.
And it was no UT, no college students, no whatever else.
Just straight swimmers.
Because everyone was on spring break.
I guess that is true, yeah. Yeah. You just got, the very minimal Knoxville locals, and then...
I just got all, because I have, the age range, set higher. So I just got, all the senior and super senior swimmers.
Nice.
Yeah, at the... Just it was one after the other. I was like, man, I kind of want to watch this race now and see which one of these girls wins.
You should have gone to the aquatic center.
Hey, it's me.
I swiped right.
Did you swipe right here? Pull out your phone. Let me show you.
You have a poster board. I swiped right on you. Like you see a girl at starting an event, you just hold that up.
That makes a lot more sense then.
Yeah, that does make sense now. That would be really confusing. Why are there so many swimmers on here?
Because I saw a few schools. I was like, all right, maybe we got a 4 or 5 school meet going on here. And then I was like, this is 11, 12.
Were they getting further and further away from Tennessee? You're like, yeah, what's happening?
Washington.
Yeah. This isn't an SEC meet.
Okay, there's Arkansas. Okay. And then we're like, wait. Is that UConn? Anyway. Sorry for the late start, and I guess, we got to just go ahead, take a break, and get into it. Disappointing close, man.
It's almost like I don't want to dive into it.
I don't either, but I
feel I'm looking over, I'm at the pool at a 25-foot diving board, and I'm right on the edge, and I got to jump, and someone's about to push
me. I was thinking more
of
a polar plunge.
Yeah?
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm thinking more of it kind of feels like just jumping into a pool of boiling hot water. There's no good result once you jump in.
We just got to talk our way through it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, back here on the Blitz. Man,
it's alright if
for the first time probably
I'm not afraid
in a while,
away,
I can't really defend Rick Barnes coaching last night.
Yeah. They were, I was talking to Hickman before you came in, and he was saying, I've never seen Charlie so anti-Barnes, I guess.
I mean...
Not anti, but just disappointed.
Right. I was more so disappointed in him because I think I think a lot of the criticism toward him a lot of times is unfair. I think he does warrant a lot of unfair criticism, and I think that he receives a greater ratio of criticism to praise than he probably deserves to. I think he's not in that elite tier of coaches. He's just in that very good tier of coaches. And in that very good tier of coaches, there's just everyone has their flaws. And, for whatever reason, I guess Rick Barnes
flaw is that his teams have the ability to fall flat every once in a while. I don't know. But I thought this year was one of his best coaching jobs. I really did. All things considered, you know, I thought he had to adjust to a ton of different lineups. You know, he was trying to bring some different people along. Like, the player development was there. He dealt with his starting point guard getting hurt, injuries all year long. Like, for the most part, just even the fact that he didn't keep this team from torpedoing, you know, when you have a bunch of injured starters and you lose back-to-back games on a buzzer-beating three.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought all of that was a pretty impressive job from Rick Barnes. I thought the last 2 years have been good coaching jobs from Rick Barnes. But last year against Michigan, you know, blame that on coaching, I don't really think so. I mean, you know, Rick Barnes didn't go out there and miss every single three. I think that was just poor execution in an untimely spot. Last night, I think for really the first time in Rick Barnes' tournament history, I blame a loss on Rick Barnes. His team didn't seem focused. The game plan didn't make a lot of sense. The lineups and the execution in which, you know, employed those lineups didn't make a lot of sense. And you know, really, too, I thought just last night kind of did point to Rick Barnes' glaring flaw. And the other night, I was having a conversation with some guys on Twitter in a Twitter spaces, and we were comparing Bruce Pearl to Rick Barnes. And someone said, you know, Bruce Pearl, he's a better in-game coach than Rick Barnes. You know, and I said, hold up, I don't know if I agree with that. In-game coach, I think Rick Barnes does a good job of, you know, making some adjustments here or there for the most part. Like, I think he does a good job of, like, drawing up inbounds plays and stuff like that. I think what separates the two is Bruce Pearl always had such a good understanding of the flow of the game, of when to call timeouts, when to press a ref, when to lay off, you know, when to get up and press his team a little bit, when to lay off, you know, when to call timeouts, you know, when to press the right buttons. And I think that's where, you know, Rick lacks the most as a coach. I think it just I don't always get the feeling that, you know, he has that just great, you know, just feel for the flow of different games like some of those elite coaches do. And, you know, I could just sound like a complete just ignorant jerk right now saying that about a guy that knows more basketball than, you know, 10 of me's, 20 of me's combined. But I just get that feeling sometimes. And I think last night was kind of an example of that. I think there were times he could have, you know, maybe got on the refs a little bit more and tried to influence the whistle back his way a little bit, because we know college refs are influenced easily. You know, I probably could have called a timeout a little bit earlier. You know, I think he probably could have got on his guys a couple of times, fired him up a little bit, you know, at certain times, and then pulled back at, you know, at other times. It's just, I don't know. I was disappointed in that aspect of it last night too.
Yeah, I think a big disappointment of it all was just that you played pretty solid in the first half, and as you got more and more into crunch time, it felt like you crumbled even more. And I feel like that is kind of where where you're talking about how he isn't as good as feeling the flow of a game and feeling how things are going. During that big run, you know, with about 10 minutes left in the second half, you just were kind of sitting there in shock, just like, make it stop, like, let's do something, call a timeout, something. You just couldn't get anything going, and you just kind of, you felt hopeless. You saw a team that just kind of looked lost, and they didn't really have anywhere to go, just kind of running around there a little bit, just chicken with their heads cut off a little bit, not knowing what to do. Couldn't settle the guys down. Man.
At some point in the second half, FAU, their man-to-man defense was able to just lock you up. And I don't think that you tried to do enough different things. I mean, they manned you up better than Tennessee manned them up. You know, that's a tough reality of last night. One of my biggest concerns that we talked about all week was going to be rebounding. FAU a pretty good rebounding team, and you know, if you look at the size of that team and you wonder, like, how are they such a good rebounding team? Oftentimes it's because the way that they space you out, you know, the way that oftentimes when you match up, you know, personnel-wise with them too, the way that you get spaced out offensively, you know, you're not in your usual positions. Sometimes you're scrambling around a little bit and you're not, you know, in those right spots to get box outs. You know, you don't have a guy right on you. Because FAU just spaces things out so strange, like uniquely. And it's just, you know, when you get to chasing like that, like you do on defense, you're not there to get your box outs. So you can have these smaller, quicker guys. You know, there's not a lot of them to get when you're trying to box them out. And if they're not right on you because they're all spaced out on the perimeter, you know, they can kind of cut hard towards the basket and squeeze in between those two hips. Like, you just get in these tough spots for rebounding. I'm not excusing it necessarily, but, you know, that's how FAU's been able to exploit some teams this year. Because they're, you know, they're used to where they're at on the floor. They understand what that is, you know, what that's like to rebound in that way. And then, you know, they employed that last night.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought they did a good job of shutting down Santi. And, you know, I think you saw, obviously, you know, you saw Santi have a good game in that Duke game, but it was really Olivier who played a great game. And I think you saw last night, Santi, they did a good job of limiting the looks that he got and limiting the open looks that he got. And, you know, we couldn't really get anyone going, you know, maybe outside of Euros there at the very start of the game. We couldn't really get anyone going consistently for the whole game as a second option to try and free up Santi on some of those, you know, those screens coming around and shooting threes. So, man, it was just, it's just not, you know, it's hard to say, like, it just wasn't your night again, but sometimes it's like that. You know, you shot 33% from the field as a team. Like, it's not, you're not winning most ball games shooting like that, but it's tough coming in here after another year, you know, and just saying, well, you just didn't really put it together at the right time after you thought you had it together a little bit there. It's a tough reality to face.
I mean, I'm sure Three and Out spent a ton of time talking about this. I know that Nate was, like, tracking this throughout the game and how the different lineups fared versus when you went small and big.
Mm-hmm.
But we spent way too much time in that big lineup, and I think part of it is because Jemai Mashak picked up those two fouls, and you know, it's that outdated mindset of sitting your guys with two fouls. Both teams did it last night. They sat John L. Davis, too.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, Tennessee was, you know, I thought they didn't play a good first half either. I thought that Tennessee was fortunate
they stuck in
to
there.
Be ahead at halftime.
Right.
And it was only because FAU had missed their open threes and John L. Davis had spent, you know, five to six minutes on the bench.
Yeah.
Tennessee was very lucky to be ahead at half. And I heard the announcers saying, well, you know, it feels like Tennessee should be up more. You know, they've kind of been dominating this game. And I was like, ah, that's not quite it. They haven't been dominating this game. It feels like Tennessee should be up more because FAU has been giving them so many opportunities. But
yeah.
Tennessee failed to capitalize on said opportunities. They weren't dominating. You know, it didn't feel like they should be up, you know, again, because of a dominating play. It was just because FAU was playing, you know, such a poor level of basketball. And it's unbelievable. I mean, it's just so frustrating, right? It's just, I understand, like, March is so, so tough. And if you're not one of those 2, 3, 4, 5, like, elite programs, you know, Final Fours are just a crapshoot. Like, you just want to be a good program, you know, and consistently be one of those top 4 seeds every year. And just you think that if you keep getting there and have that stability, you crack through. But, you know, last night is just really one of those times where it's like, man, is it ever going to happen? You know, how can we not make our way through? How do we squander another just massive opportunity, man? You had a 9 seed in front of you to get to the Elite Eight that played a terrible first half of basketball, and you're the ones going home.
Yeah, if you had a year to do it, this was a path that was almost given to you.
And look, next year you're probably going to find yourself in a somewhat similar position. You know, with Rick Barnes, like, again, he's built that stability. You know, he's probably going to have a team that's, again, going to warrant, you know, a top four seed in the NCAA tournament. And he'll probably get himself in a position again where he's playing to get to the Sweet 16, or maybe he's in the Sweet 16 and playing to get to the Elite Eight. But I think for the first time, you know, I'm not confident, but it's just like, man, at this point, I don't know. It just feels like more of a cross your fingers game. Do I really have any confidence that Tennessee could make a run? Do I really believe it? I don't know. You know, I'm officially in, I don't know. Maybe not. Maybe they can. I still think they can. You know, I think that's just the nature of college basketball. Everyone's a tournament loser until they win one. We've seen plenty of teams break that narrative, and, you know, maybe Tennessee can be the next one. But it just, when you fail to execute again, it just feels tough.
Yeah, it just, I think it's tough, too, just because everything just kind of unraveled for you right at the end of the season. You had a really strong year, you know, and then you finish the season going 7-8. You lose Zakai with a torn ACL. You put it together for a couple games in the tournament. You start feeling good. You start feeling like, you know, this team's been through a lot and this team's faced a ton of adversity and they've lost one of their best players, but they're still here fighting in the Sweet 16, chance to get to the Elite Eight for the second time in school history. Like, you thought that with everything that this team had faced, that it was just one more hurdle that was seemingly, you thought, was pretty easy to get over, I guess. And then you just kind of get humbled. You get sent back down to earth a little bit, and you got to go back to the drawing board. So I feel like maybe just the way that these last 3 or 4 weeks panned out in the season, it kind of just compounds on how you're feeling after that game, especially last night.
Yeah, I mean, it is just crazy to think you entered the month of February demolishing a top 8 team in the country and feeling like you were one of 4 to 5 teams that legitimately had the ability to win a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
And from that place in your season to now, I mean, again, like we said last week, you know, what's a successful season? I said a successful season is an Elite Eight. I said a disappointment of a season is shy of a Sweet 16, and I think if you reach a Sweet 16, you know, you met expectations, but you didn't move the needle. It feels a little bit worse because of the opponent. Granted, FAU is a team that should be like a 6 seed.
Yeah.
You know, they're a top 20 team in the country in my eyes, but, you know, they were still a 9 seed. You know, there was still a 9 next to their name. You still had to play a bad first half, and you still lost. And you got beat at your own game. You know, they manned up better than you and they rebounded better than you. So I guess that makes that Sweet 16 that, you know, you didn't exceed, but you didn't disappoint either. It makes it feel a little bit more disappointing. But I'm not going to go back on my word. You know, a Sweet 16, I'll consider that just a stagnant season. But at this point, I guess I'm just kind of tired of, like, stagnant.
Yeah, it's an okay season, but you're tired of just being okay.
On one hand, I appreciate the stability.
Right.
I love that every year you're going to have a team that, again, is going to be like one of the top 16 to 20 teams in the country that's going to consistently have talented players that are likable, that you're going to want to watch, that, you know, that's consistently going to have and win big games. You know, that's going to consistently compete to win both the SEC, the SEC tournament, that's going to consistently compete to be a top 4 seed. You know, all of that is great, and I don't think I'd trade all of that for, you know, the unknown necessarily,
right.
But it is frustrating on the other end of that. You know, you don't have higher peaks.
Yeah, I was just about to say that. You don't – it's an interesting position that you're coming into, because you know that the grass isn't always greener. And so you could be making a really bad decision if you were to maybe move away from Barnes. But, right, at the same time, when is having just good enough season going to be not good enough?
I think that's also, I mean, you have to I think we all have to be realistic with ourselves, too, to a certain extent. You know, I think that's one of the great curses of college sports is you know, coaches do something really good but not great over and over and over and over again that the really good doesn't feel really good anymore. But it's hard to then move on and find someone that can replicate it. Oftentimes, you know, you end up with somebody worse off. Because it's not like basketball is filled with amazing coaches. You know, there's a lot of flawed guys out there. There's a lot of guys that have, you know, head-scratching losses and frustrating statements and make frustrating decisions. And, you know, the odds of finding one equal, I don't know. The odds of finding one better, pretty tough. And, you know, some people would argue that's a risk you want to take if you want to, you know, get to the top. I don't know if I necessarily disagree with that, but I think at this point with Rick Barnes, he's going to be here for probably less than 5 years.
Yeah, I would say 3 more years.
And we had this conversation last week, Sam. We have so much faith in A, Danny White, but then B, like Rick Barnes has this program in a place that it's such a like respectable, you know, high-level basketball program now that Tennessee should be able to, you know, to make a fantastic hire when Rick Barnes leaves. But I don't know. I think if you were to move on from Rick Barnes, I think that would maybe potentially complicate that hire. I think a lot of coaches, especially if you're going to go try to hire one that's already great, would be a little bit turned off by that move. I don't know.
You know, I think that is interesting. Are you just kind of saying in the sense of like, wow, if Rick Barnes is getting fired here with what he's brought this program up to, like, what am I going to do if I don't get
this
team on track
go?
In X amount of years type of thing?
Right.
Yeah.
Is this
yeah.
really somewhere I want to go? Because, you know, if you're hiring away a great coach, then he's already in a good situation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of variables. I don't even know what I think. I certainly don't want...
Kind of need the 24-hour rule, you know?
I certainly don't want Rick Barnes gone. Like, I'm still not in that contingent at all. I am still a Barnes guy through and through, even on a tough day like today where I admit that like I'm critical of him today. I think that he did an awful job last night, quite frankly.
He got outcoached.
I'm still a Barnes guy through and through, so I'm just kind of throwing out some hypotheticals here, I guess. Just, again, we're talking through it. But 10:40, we're going to get to a break here. Love to hear from you guys today. The Big Orange Philly phone lines are open. 865-546-8200. That's your number to call in. Again, 865-546-8200. All right, back here on the Blitz, rolling along on this Friday morning. pardon me, a somber Friday. Going to head over to the Big Orange Philly phone lines. We got a call from our good friend Roberto. Roberto, happy... Well, I guess as happy as you can be Friday.
I mean, I'm up several hundred dollars after last night. Several. you know, gents, I've kicked it around with some friends, and I've got friends that are literally, like, you know, on the edge. I'm like, guys, like, use logic and reason. The other national debt. Like, this is what was going to happen. Eventually, Rick Barnes plays to his seed line. He played to his seed line. Exactly. Got there and properly got outcoached, which is also a Rick Barnes tenet, especially in March. He coached against a team that is not a blue blood, or as I would say, his air quote dream job interview. So what do you expect? Like, I'm not happy, disappointed, but I'm also a reasonable human being that, you know, lost a family member this week and got to get up this morning and see the sunrise. Like, back off the ledge, people. It is basketball. Okay? And it should have met your reasonable expectations for this team, to be fair to Rick Barnes. Now, also to be fair to Rick Barnes, he's a Hall of Fame basketball coach. There is, I think he's probably first ballot, frankly. Okay?
Yeah.
He needs to retire. He needs to hang it up. If last night was not an indication to him himself, okay? Now I know he's got an ego the size of Texas. That's why he was a perfect fit there. I like Rick Barnes as a man. I've met him several times. Okay? He even bought my wife dessert on her birthday one year. If that tells you how close I've sat to Rick Barnes at a restaurant. Okay? Kind, good man. Go be a kind, good man with your family. It's time. The game has clearly passed you by. And if you're too arrogant to realize that the game has passed you by, you need somebody to hit you with the truth.
I don't think the game's passed him by.
Oh, come on.
I think
come
he got out coached last night, but I don't think it's fair to say the game passed him by. In the last 2 years, we've seen him.
So the game is all defense first. That's literally all
he's talking
about.
In the last 2 years, we've seen him catch up to the game. You know, the mid-range shots have gone away. Tennessee's up their three-point shot usage severely.
Did they go away last night? Did you look at our shot chart last night?
Well, last night is a whole different story because last night you're a pieced-together team without a point guard. That playing a team that's running you off the three-point line and trying to give you the middle of the floor and giving you those mid-range shots, and you have two guys that are, you know,
you don't have
shot
a point
makers,
guard.
I guess, to the extent of that is their shot, that mid-range
you,
shot.
You think a coach that hasn't had the game passing by would at least try to get his top 100 four-star point guard on the floor at some point during the season when he's drubbing teams? Do you think a game that hasn't passed you by maybe makes you try to press that guy?
I think you're mistaking flaws for the game passing you by as a whole, though. Like, yes, he's made mistakes, and you were pointing those out, but, I mean, again, he's
the game is no longer a defensive game, Charlie.
But he's changed
you
his
agree
offense.
With this, right?
I do agree with this. I still think defense, I mean, you look, defense is a better indicator than offense of if you're going to be a successful basketball team still, but I think you
have to. Well, if that's true, we should be the best
defense.
Team in the country.
I mean, I think you have to have a good offense. Like, obviously, balance is key.
What's good to you? If you let's just say Ken Pom ratings, what would be a good offense in your world?
Not Tennessee's
like number wise, please.
Not Tennessee's offense this year. Like a good offense to me, like top 45, top 50. Like if you can have like
we're a fringe that coming into last night.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you were a good offense. I don't think you were a terrible offense. I think you were a flawed offense with personnel issues. But to say the game has passed him by, I don't think it's fair. I think you're just pointing out some of his mistakes. Like, again, I think he's changed the offense. He's brought in guys like Greg Polinsky to try to get more NBA influence in the offense and the sets that he's been running. You know, he's gotten more of a Davidson.
But yet he only talks
now.
About how
he's
bad his defense was at the end of the game.
Yeah, I mean, he's still a guy that loves defense through and through, but it's not like
well,
he's
loving defense
to change offensively.
Is going to get you beat. Being solely focused on, I mean, literally every offensive comment last night after the game, he literally turned into a defensive comment. Here's the deal. If you want to be defensive-minded, great. Get out in transition and score. Like, we don't do that. There was no sense of urgency at the end of the game. And, I mean, maybe it's old school of him. Maybe the game's passed him by. He doesn't use his timeouts when he needs to. He never has since he's gotten here. So maybe, I mean, you saw, is it Dusty May? You saw him last night when we got out on a little run there. I think it was about 8 points we put together. He immediately called a timeout, and it cooled us off. Like, coaches know how to use their timeouts nowadays. And it seems like Rick Barnes just lets his teams play through it. And that's the stubbornness factor. And in today's game, being stubborn is not going to get you W's either. Maybe the game hasn't passed him by. Okay, maybe it hasn't. I'll say maybe it hasn't. Okay? But he sure as hell doesn't act like he wants to be there. He had almost zero energy last night, and he looked completely lost. Guys, you give me way too much time. I'm very grateful for it. Hope you guys have a great Friday. Hug up your family and give them kisses. Give your loved ones kisses. It was a tough week. So take care.
Hey, you take care, Roberto. I appreciate you calling. Good to hear from you as always. Hope you and your family doing all right. I mean, Rick Barnes is a flawed coach. Like, again, we were talking about that like earlier today. He's on that tier of very good but not great coaches, and in that tier are guys that – you know, have something holding them back from being great. And very good, I mean, it is what it is. Very good. I like very good. But the thing holding Rick Barnes back from being great again is I think sometimes his lack of feel to, you know, press again the right buttons and, you know, to make some of those right in-game moves, like calling the timeouts and you know, pressing the refs at the proper times, just like we were talking about. But, you know, I don't think he needs to retire. I don't think the game's passed him by. I think he's here for 2 to 3 more years, you know, for 2 to 3 more years, maybe, you know, probably, I wouldn't say probably more than that, but for the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to have teams that are top 16 teams in the country that are exciting to watch, that win big games, and you're going to have your program in a place that it'll have a good roster to take over and, you know, a sizable investment into wanting to be a top basketball program and, you know, the track record to prove it. And you'll be able to go hire one of the top coaches in the country, and Tennessee will maintain their status as a top basketball program, and maybe that guy will be able to win the big games. Or maybe next year Rick Barnes will crack through. You know, that's not out of the realm of possibilities either.
You think he makes it through his extension through 26-27 season?
I don't even know if he, like, wants to coach. I mean, I don't know if he wants to coach that long. I think the extensions are, you know, more of like a optics status thing sometimes anyway. Yeah. Also, just for recruiting purposes, you want to have your coach extended like through when the guys you're currently recruiting would be seniors. You want to, you know, if you're an older coach like Rick Barnes that has that stability, just so you kind of show them like, yeah, I'll still be around like through your senior year, even if you won't, you know, just from a recruiting perspective.
We'll see if he makes it to 70.
How old is he right now?
67.
67? Good man, Rick Barnes. I was sad to be disappointed in him last night. Because, again, I think, you know, going back to his tournament losses, like, there's been a lot of luck go against Tennessee. Like, Loyola Chicago, if Kyle Alexander is able to play in that game, you know, he was one of the more valuable players in the country. From a metric standpoint, you know, I think you beat Loyola Chicago and you have another pretty open path. You know, if the following year, you know, Purdue, if the referees call a foot out of bounds when they're saving it in bounds or whatever, with like, what, 4 seconds left in the game?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's Tennessee basketball. They're getting fouled and shooting to go up 2 possessions. But instead, you know, the ball gets inbounded to Carson Edwards in the corner. He misses a three, and we get a foul call that literally prompted a rule change that you can no longer kick out to draw fouls.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's some bad luck there involved, too, because if you get through that game, I think you had a great chance to beat Virginia, go to a Final Four, and that team was capable of winning a national championship. You know, it's I wouldn't even say bad luck. I would say maybe bad luck for Rick Barnes that his team let him down to a certain extent against Michigan, shooting as poor as they did from three. You know, I don't think the game plan was terrible. You failed to guard Hunter Dickinson, but so do a lot of teams. It's more so the fact that you couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. You know, maybe it does fall back on Rick Barnes. Maybe the fact that he has teams that, you know, throughout the years have that's one thing that's been in common. Like, sometimes they'll just have nights where they go ice cold from three. Maybe that does let right back, you know, somehow get back to Rick Barnes. I don't know. But, you know, I didn't think it was coaching that lost you that game against Michigan. But last night, I think for the first time, again, in March with Tennessee, I fully, squarely put the blame on the coaching of Rick Barnes. And that's disappointing. I didn't expect the season to end that way. I expected Tennessee's loss to just, you know, be Tennessee finally succumbing to their personnel issues.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be Rick Barnes getting outcoached by Dusty May.
I agree. I think you've seen times where, you know, we've seen Rick Barnes maybe get outcoached in a tournament game, but you really thought this year that the way that our downfall would be just lack of depth in some places and just not having some of our key guys there.
It's just,
so that was, yeah, I think that does add to the disappointment of it all.
Like, why? What was our defensive game plan? Why were we helping so much on the drive? Our help defense was so aggressive. Our rotations were so aggressive, and we just fed exactly into what FAU wanted us to do. We over-rotated so hard that they were able to just get all these kickouts. We were scrambling so hard to then, you know, get back into position for these kickouts. Then we're out of place for the box outs. Then they grab offensive rebounds. They do the whole thing again. You got to just have your guys man up. And if, you know, once every five possessions, you know, you have a guy get beat off the dribble and he has to contest a layup, it is what it is. But you couldn't just play in FAU's hands like that. It was just so disappointing. But, you know, we got to come to a break. Hour one done. Hour two, it's on deck. Stay with us here on the Blitz.